District of Conservation is sponsored by the Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow, better known as CFECT. To learn more about our sponsor, head over to CFECT.org. Thanks for listening to the program. Welcome to District of Conservation. I'm your host, Gabriella Hoffman. This podcast offers a sober examination into all things hunting, fishing, shooting sports, energy, environment, and the public policy surrounding it. And this podcast also specializes in original interviews that you won't hear elsewhere. Here's what I have for you today. I hope you had a wonderful Easter, and there won't be any fooling here on the podcast because this is a very serious show. A lot of things that we talk about here sound like jokes or things that will leave you in disbelief, but there are some good things to report as we enter April. Obviously, turkey season is around the horizon, the trout will be rising more, and just spring is going to be all around. Tomorrow, I will be heading to Houston to speak at Sam Houston State University to give another conservationist conservative lecture, and it's going to be a little fine-tuned compared to some previous lectures I've given, and I've now been doing this lecture for almost 6 years. It's incredible just how much people want to hear this topic and bring me to come talk about it. It's very humbling that students and Gen Z want to hear this. So I'm grateful, and we're going to keep it going for however long I can keep it going. And I plan to keep it going in perpetuity for however long I can do this. But today's episode is largely going to focus on two interesting developments. If you're a Virginia resident, the first topic is going to jive really well with you. It's some good news about our governor, Governor Youngkin, vetoing over 30 gun control bills. It was to be expected. Thankfully, he did not disappoint on this front. I'm going to talk about a couple, and I love the statement he gave overall about why he vetoed it. And then we're going to go a little south to Florida, where potential closure of the Big Cypress National Preserve is concerning and should raise some alarm bells. We talked about bear's ears recently on the program with Andrew Sandstrom. Now I want to give some attention to this because you don't normally see this on the East Coast, mostly on the West Coast. The 30 by 30 initiative from President Joe Biden has essentially closed down public lands to multiple or shared uses, and that is not what conservation is. They're teeing up national monuments, essentially, or large swaths of public lands to become permanently closed off to multiple uses. That's not conservation. That is rewilding, and rewilding is not good. So let's dive deep into these two topics. First, I bring your attention to this good news coming out of Richmond. Governor Glenn Youngkin vetoed 30 gun control bills, and I really appreciated his statement because people have been kind of wondering, where is he sitting on the Second Amendment? He didn't really campaign so actively and voraciously for it when he was running for governor in 2021. People were unsure if he was going to really live up to expectations of being a Second Amendment supporter. But I pay close attention to these natural resources issues, conservation issues, even here in Virginia. Early in his tenure as governor, and we have four-year terms, non-consecutive terms for those of you who don't know, so you have to get a lot done in 4 years. But early in his administration, he joined the Congressional Sportsmen's Foundation Governor Sportsman Caucus, and membership into that, for the most part, the individuals who are serving in that capacity or hold membership don't typically support gun control. There are some exceptions to the rule, but I knew with his membership into the CSF Governor's Caucus, I knew that he there was not going to support gun control. And then also, I never got any indication that he was going to be wobbly on the Second Amendment, even when we've had some horrific mass shootings here in Virginia. He never wavered thus far. And I think he understands, because he has good people in his leadership across the Natural Resources Department, public safety, what have you, you know, Second Amendment, Lieutenant Governor, pro-Second Amendment, Attorney General as well, people serving in the same kind of capacity as him or serving alongside him, rather. They're ardent Second Amendment supporters, so of course he wouldn't, you know, step on their toes or anger them. But also his involvement, like I said, in the CSF group, and then also believing that conservation is conservative. I think he knows from his various advisors and cabinet secretaries that if you also restrict Second Amendment rights, you're also depriving Virginia of critical Pittman-Robertson funds. According to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service final apportionment of 2022-2023, if I'm not mistaken, Virginia received from PR dollars almost $20.5 million. So could you imagine if that money were to go away? This is actually for fiscal year 2023, so I want to be accurate there. But from 2022, I think the new 2023 numbers have been released since there was a $1.3 billion haul. But imagine those $20.5 million going away because of gun control or restricting certain firearms and weapons with that. So I think Governor Youngkin is understanding, which is why I didn't doubt his capabilities to protect it. So I want to read his statements and some of the other justifications for his veto. He says, "I swore an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States of America and the Constitution of Virginia, and that absolutely includes protecting the right of law-abiding Virginians to keep and bear arms," said Governor Glenn Youngkin. "I am pleased to sign 4 public safety bills, which are common sense reforms with significant bipartisan support from the General Assembly, and offer recommendations to several bills which, if adopted, would make it harder for criminals to use guns in the commission of a violent act." Let's read some of the statements. So he had one that was, and he, I like that he cited the Virginia Constitution, which was great. So he used that as a justification for vetoing these 30 various different bills. I'm not going to read through every 30 bill. I'll link to his statement in terms of vetoing and what happened there. And he said that, for one thing, he vetoed one bill that would have criminalized an individual's possession of a firearm in a building owned or operated by a public institution of higher learning. Let's scan a little more here, because there are 30 vetoes. He vetoed a bill that would have made obtaining your concealed handgun permit harder. Bravo. And I like the justification there, because it shouldn't be an ordeal to get your CHP here in Virginia. We have pretty decent reciprocity for the most part. There were some changes, unfortunately, that happened during Northam's tenure. And he also vetoed one requiring fingerprints with the application of a concealed handgun permit or renewal. Because he says that background checks already do a good job of doing that. So he also revoked, I like this too, he understands that liability question really well. So he vetoed one that would have penalized manufacturers for the crimes of people who use their products maliciously. And he talks favorably about the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act, already provides a framework for addressing civil actions against firearms industry entities concerning negligent entrustment and defects. This federal law, grounded in common sense and common law principles, prevents baseless litigation that could financially devastate a lawful industry with exorbitant legal fees. Other lawful industries, such as vaccine producers, have similar protections. So I like that he did that too. I wasn't aware of that. Reciprocity. He understands that Virginia's current system of concealed handgun reciprocity works. We recognize valid concealed weapons permits issued by other states that meet certain conditions, and a sizable majority of other states recognize Virginia's concealed handgun permits. And he said that this bill, had it been enacted, would have targeted law-abiding Virginians by restricting the number of states in which permit holders can carry for self-defense, potentially discouraging gun owners from visiting the Commonwealth. And I remember 2015, the previous attorney general had revoked concealed handgun permit reciprocity with 25 other states. And actually, through brokering that had happened through a state senator, we increased our reciprocity to 28 states. And I wrote an op-ed and angered some people. I angered the attorney general's office in the Richmond Times-Dispatch when I did that. So this is good. Let's see. He vetoed a bill relating to extreme risk protection orders and expressed his various concerns there. Bravo. Let's see. There's the one about a waiting period. He vetoed that because that is done intentionally. And when you have long wait periods, let's say someone is needing a gun, a survivor of domestic abuse, and then their abuser attacks them violently and even lethally in that wait process. So it makes no sense. I also wrote an op-ed, I think, in the Times-Dispatch about that a few years ago. And he understands that. The 5-day wait period makes no sense. It doesn't stop crime whatsoever. Let's read about so-called assault weapons. So gun control proponents love to conflate modern sporting rifles, namely Armalite rifles, AR-15s, as assault rifles. That's what the AR stands for. It's specific to the name. And they're largely semi-automatic in nature, so they're not assault in nature, because assault means fully automatic. Anyone with half a brain understands that, but we have to keep reiterating this. But the governor understood this about vetoing a bill that would have prohibited the carrying of so-called assault weapons in public areas. Current law already prohibits brandishing a firearm in a manner that reasonably induces fear in another person, or holding a firearm in public place that creates an unreasonable fear of violence. He also, to my understanding, vetoed a bill that would have placed limitations on how many rounds of ammunition your gun can hold. And he says that the Commonwealth of Virginia precludes the Commonwealth from prohibiting a broad category of firearms widely used for lawful purposes, such as self-defense. He said that certain members of the General Assembly have pursued legislation banning most contemporary semi-automatic firearms and specific ammunition feeding devices. Like all Virginians, I'm profoundly troubled by the occurrences of mass shootings and crimes committed with firearms, the pain and sorrow inflicted by criminals with heinous intentions are truly heart-wrenching and should not be minimized for our communities, the victims, or their families. Virginia has some of the strictest gun laws in the country. Unfortunately, the Commonwealth has reduced penalties for criminals contributing to violent crime. Enhancing penalties for crimes committed with firearms will reverse this trend. Our most significant gap, however, has been our behavioral health system, which is why substantial investments in behavioral health are necessary. This twofold approach can provide a real solution without creating outcomes that would affect law-abiding citizens and violate our constitutional rights. You can read all the 30-some-odd vetoes for yourself because it's a lot to digest. But I'm pretty happy as a Virginia gun owner. I don't see anything wrong with this. It's good he is acting as a stopgap for gun control after he leaves. There's a lot of uncertainty there. You know, who's going to take over? We're not going to stew on that right now because it's a while away. You know, elections are light years away here in Virginia. And I don't want to fathom what is going to happen in a couple years. But for now, just know if you live in Virginia, you have reciprocity with Virginia, your gun rights are safe under the Youngkin administration. Let's mosey on down to South Florida now with this brief discussion about Big Cypress National Preserve. I want this to be on your radar because even if you don't live in Florida, but you support public lands, you see these closures occurring. That has to raise some eyebrows, right? You know, if you claim to be for public lands, you want to support multiple uses. You want to support keeping public land open to the public wherever is permitted and allowed. And under Bureau of Land Management, Forest Service lands, and even some National Park Service lands, wherever they fall, for the most part, on areas that are not wilderness area, you can largely access public lands. The more strict the restriction as you go higher, I think national parks tend to be the second most strict. Most activities like hunting, fishing, grazing, etc., are largely prohibited. Even worse, even more restrictive are wilderness areas. And that is what concerns Big Cypress National Preserve, because the Biden administration, from what friends of the show, Travis Thompson and Mike Elfenbein, have said, this wilderness designation, I'm going to explain what this is. I wrote about this in Town Hall, so I'm going to truncate it a little bit for you. But you all have heard about closures in the West through justification by this 30 by 30 plan, the so-called America the Beautiful plan the Biden administration is enacting and enforcing. They've so far, they claim it's conserved 24 million acres. To me, that doesn't seem like conservation. I know it's not conservation. It's a rewilding plan to close off lands, to protect so-called 30% of waters, 30% of lands by 2030. They love these arbitrary deadlines. They mean nothing. And what these do, unfortunately, is while they're promising great stuff, they're promising conservation. Conservation is not defined in these plans. And to me, this Big Cypress National Preserve Wilderness designation seems to be falling in line with this too. And let's talk about what this entails. So Big Cypress National Preserve is about 720,000 acres in South Florida. So it's around the Everglades. It's a little bit below, I think, the Naples area, and a little bit below, if we're talking in the context of eastern Florida, the coast there, I think a little bit below or adjacent to Fort Lauderdale, kind of going towards the Keys, the Florida Keys. But it's a little below or within the vicinity of the Everglades National Park. I haven't been to Big Cypress, but my friends that I alluded to and mentioned who come on the show routinely have been there. This is their backyard, especially Mike's. And they want to convert a good chunk of this area into a wilderness area. And why this is concerning: wilderness areas boast the highest degree of protection, are largely off limits, and are very difficult to traverse. If you don't know about the Wilderness Act of 1964, there is a overall national wilderness preservation system that today manages 800 areas across the country. You largely find these out west. You find these in Montana, you find these in Wyoming, California, largely in places out west. But now they want to put these here on the eastern United States, where we have far fewer acres of public lands. We're a largely private land area region, and there are many good things to private lands. I don't dispute that because I hunt on private lands. It's less pressured. I like private lands. I think you can support both public lands and private lands and the confluence of both. But what worries me, having seen what they've done with wilderness designations out west, I find that this can be very problematic for Florida, where this area, which is frequented often by some of the local tribes, the Seminole, the Miccosukee, hunters, scientists, recreationists, this is going to close off a lot of access to a lot of people and different stakeholders, and they're not happy with this. But back to the preservation system, the wilderness preservation system, they're administered for the use and enjoyment of the American people in such a manner that will leave them unimpaired for future use and enjoyment as wilderness and to provide for the protection of these areas. When I was scoping out locations to film at Bears Ears and some of these other Western states when we did our public lands report for my Conservation Nation series, I recall looking over the map when I was deciding where we want to film. And I was told specifically, you cannot film in wilderness areas. It's a reasonable ask not to film there because there's scientific inquiry going on, whatever, fine. We chose a good location at one of the overlooks where you can see some of the artifacts, non-invasive, all perfectly kosher, easily accessible to the public, nothing surprising of it. But these wilderness areas, let me tell you, dear listeners, when you read more about it, it is extremely concerning. And so a lot of stakeholders, including Mike, spoke to the Miami Herald about the designation restricting a lot of access. And here is what Mike had told the Miami Herald. I want to read for you his quotes. And we had seen Betty Osceola, who I also know as well. She's very integral in kind of this Everglades ecosystem conservation efforts. She's friends with Mike, or maybe I think someone related to her, Curtis Osceola, the chief of staff of the Miccosukee tribe, also opposed this. We're opposing very, very hard right now because we don't believe this is the right thing for the Big Cypress. And there have been 25,000 people who have signed a petition circulated by the tribe urging Biden to stop the National Park Service from designating large parts of Big Cypress as wilderness. So you have Native American tribes, you have gladesmen like Mike, who told the Miami Herald that it doesn't make hunting illegal, it makes it so difficult that the average person doesn't bother. And the article goes to show or expand on his thoughts that his biggest concern, even bigger than whether hunters and off-road vehicle riders can access Big Cypress, Elfenbein said, is how the preserve is protected. He worries that a wilderness designation would block anyone but Park Service staff from quickly managing controlled wildfire burns or invasive species, which are legion, due to the lengthy permit wait times. There's another quote from him. As it is already, the National Park Service is incapable of meeting the needs of the system. Always short-staffed or short-funded, can't burn as much as they need to burn, and can't keep up with invasive species. So Mike's concerns, that of the Miccosukee tribe, prompted both Florida senators, Senator Rick Scott and Senator Marco Rubio, along with the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission chairman and Department of Environmental Protection, to write a letter expressing their dismay with the proposal here. And so in their letter to Interior Secretary Deb Haaland, the senators wrote, Big Cypress is a cherished national resource, and its proper management is crucial to preserving its ecological integrity while maintaining access points for the public, they wrote. We are deeply concerned about the potential hindrance of natural resources management, especially regarding prescribed fire, invasive species control, and the maintenance of native fish and wildlife habitats. The letter added, in light of these concerns, we respectfully request that you do not move forward with any proposed wilderness designation that will hinder the proper management of public access and natural resources within Big Cypress National Preserve, end quote. I think that's a pretty reasonable ask, don't you? So the attack on shared public access of public lands is not isolated to the West. It's even coming here to the East. And I tell you, as someone who grew up in the West and has been refined in the East, that any such closure to this is bad news for conservation. Again, it's being done under the guise of 30 by 30, America the Beautiful, even though they have already fulfilled this goal of safeguarding 30% of lands in particular. I've done the calculation, same with the Western Caucus. It's over 40% of already held BLM land, Forest Service land, National Park Service land, a couple wilderness areas and what have you. It totals to 40% of lands already off limits to multiple uses in this framework. So the goal really is to stop access and to make it harder for stakeholders to recreate on public lands, to work on public lands. So we can't trust the federal government to safeguard public lands for multiple uses, especially under this administration. Good luck with that, because they don't believe in observing no net loss. They've been closing access to hunting and fishing. They've been doing these other closures too to stop grazing, OHV, and so many other activities that are usually commonly practiced on public lands that have never been subjected to closures, as we've seen, you know, in the case of Bears Ears and some of these other Western areas, these conservation areas that are being mulled in Montana and Wyoming, as I've talked about before. There's so many moving parts and moving pieces here, But this case study in Florida has me extremely worried, so I want to talk about it with you. If you have strong feelings about it, you can write to the Interior Secretary, to different people involved in the process. Support the Florida people. They do great work. We love bringing and touting them here on the podcast. But what happens in one state ultimately can impact us all. And if you truly believe in public lands access, you have to stand up and oppose this type of closure. It's unacceptable. It's not conservation. It's rewilding. Thanks for listening to District of Conservation. If you enjoyed what you heard today, go leave us some reviews on Apple and Spotify or wherever podcasts are played. Your feedback will help us reach more people, and I love to know what is on your mind after each episode. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter to never miss a beat or a guest announcement, because that is our way of updating all of you listeners, and we have just hit 1,000 followers on Instagram for the podcast account. Thank you very much. And if you have any guest suggestions or topics you want to hear on the show, I am all ears. I would love to hear your feedback there. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for the next episode.